Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher, anytime, anywhere. I'm your host, Lady. When not on the air, my job is to eat and drink and connect people. I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, big brand startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. If you love what you hear, do connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm at LeitiSu, that's LeitiHSU, and we're all at Heritage _ Radio. You can hashtag WOMSHOW, WOMSHOW, that's short for Word of Mouth. This week, we've saved up an interview we did in Los Gatos, California, April 2014, with David Kinch, chef owner of the 2-Michelin-starred Manresa. We'll talk New Orleans, that's where he first started cooking, at the legendary Commander's Palace under Chef Paul Prudhomme. It's also the inspiration for his brand new spot called The Bywater. Manresa has risen again from the ashes of a devastating restaurant fire. David shares with us how he thinks he's different now. And we'll begin with a reflection of the past year.
Hey, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
That's great. It's a real pleasure.
It's very nice to land here today.
Thanks for coming all this way.
A day in the life, and it's a long time coming. So I had the pleasure of dining at Manresa about a month ago, mm-hmm. and absolutely delicious, echoes of Japanese and Spanish, and a lot of fun. Congratulations on the new space.
Thank you.
What's your day like today?
My day like today is, thank God, it's like a normal day when we actually have a restaurant. The restaurant was closed for 6 months, and our days were very different. It wasn't a vacation. A lot of people ask about what you did on your break.
And, oh, gosh.
I never really had a break. My day was just very different. But nowadays, thankfully, I'm very grateful that we're back to doing what we do, which is to run a restaurant and to cook food, to serve it.
So you were at an airport coming back home when you got the news.
Yes, I was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on July 7th.
What were you doing out there?
I was visiting friends and family in the Finger Lakes, and I had spent about 6 days up there in upstate New York. Had a marvelous time. The restaurant had been closed for a week, for around July 4th, which we do every year. And I was at the airport getting ready to board my flight when I got a call from an unknown number in Los Gatos. It was 5:30 in the morning in Los Gatos time, and I said, who in the world could be calling me at 5:30 in the morning? It turned out to be the fire department.
And, I mean, very few people get the terrible news, I mean, just that you lost your restaurant in a fire. Like, what is that? What were the first thoughts that went through your head, you know?
Well, I the first thing was anybody hurt? And thankfully, nobody was. Once we were closed, no one had really been in the building for over 4 days. So thankfully, no one was hurt, which, of course, was the overriding concern. But it was a long plane. It was a strange plane ride. I don't even know if I can tell you. I don't even know if I remember taking it. There was a connection as well.
Oh, gosh.
You know, for an hour and a half. So I was just, shock is a good word, you know, trying to figure out, you know, I had 5-6 hours to myself, you know, to figure out what was the plan. We're going to hit the ground here, going to go drive down to a burn site, and there's going to be a lot of people down there and a lot of moving parts. Everybody had come back into town to get ready to open the restaurant. We were opening back up on Wednesday. We were going to be prepping and cleaning on Tuesday and opening the doors Wednesday night. And, of course, all things changed real quickly. So everybody was in town. So it was a matter of just thinking about how we attack this problem. It was a problem all of a sudden that, you know, we need to find a solution for.
You have a really stellar staff. I'm impressed with Esteban. I can't believe that you've got this guy who, like, runs stuff, and he's in his 20th year. And I really enjoyed reading this one thing you said, which is that buildings can burn down, but, you know, good people are really hard to find. Is there something that, you know, there's got to be some magic here that, that gets someone to be staying for, like, 20 years?
Well, Esteban and I have always gotten along. I mean, Esteban started, you know, he was the first employee I hired at the first restaurant I owned. He was good at everything he did. He was always a go-getter. He exhibited that increasingly common trait known as common sense.
uncommon trait.
Yeah, uncommon yes. trait. I mean, you know, he's grown, you know, as I have grown professionally and the restaurant grew. And, you know, the first restaurant, Sensovi, and the current restaurant, Manresa, which was essentially a relocation project for, you know, we brought the staff over. Esteban has grown as well, and he's truly a partner. You know, he understands what I want and how I want it, and I value his opinion greatly.
What's the average tenure like here?
We don't have a lot of turnover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll be honest with you. I hate training people. You know, it's you know, you can.
It's kind of dull.
it's dull, and there's a you know, for. It's a really transient industry. You know, if someone spends time at Manresa for 6 months or even 9 months, it's a complete waste of time. So usually what I try to do, my goal is to create, you know, a positive work environment, you know, have people make contributions, try to take care of them, in return demand, you know, excellence, you know, in their chosen profession. And, you know, try to create a scenario where people will stay longer than the normal industry average. You know, to me, I benefit from it.
Mm-hmm. You know, so,
plus, again, I hate to train people.
Do you yell in the kitchen?
I pick my spots.
Okay, because you're very, you have this even-keeled demeanor about you.
In an interview, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you're sitting
here. It's fair to say that I probably... much more of a yeller when I was younger and more and less mature. I find that sarcasm works much better nowadays than yelling at people.
Wow.
No. I mean, there's, you know, it's running a kitchen, being in charge of a kitchen, you know, cooking is the easiest part of my day. The hardest part of my day and maybe anybody else's is managing and motivating people. You know, a lot of moving parts, a lot of people. We have a lot of employees at the restaurant, and to motivate and challenge everybody, some people are motivated by different methods. Some people, you know, you have to put your arm around them and pat them on the back and stroke their shoulder and whisper in their ear. And there's other people who won't respond to anything other than you grabbing them by the ears and banging their head against the wall. Figuratively, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different people are motivated by different ways, and my job is to figure that out, motivate them, and not only do that, but have them work as a team towards common goal.
It's like being a dad to many, many kids.
A coach of a sports team or something like that. There's different egos, different levels of talents, different reasons, different motivations.
So your mom and dad, they are still together.
Which is 57 years.
Fantastic.
It's a major accomplishment nowadays.
So they're nearby, right?
They're in Alamo. They're in the East Bay, up near Walnut Creek, Danville.
Mm-hmm.
Just about 30 minutes east of San Francisco.
How often do they come into the restaurant?
They're once every 2 months or so.
Okay.
Yeah, I take complete credit for expanding their horizons in terms of eating. You know, they've gone from maybe not being too adventurous to being incredibly adventurous and trying new things, especially my dad. but even my mom's made tremendous progress. It's great. It's great to see. They really like watching and seeing what we do and how we do it.
Do you cook them like some crazy VIP thing when they come in?
No. Kind of just do what we do. I mean, we work very hard to craft the experience that we have. So, we work very hard to create what we think is the best experience people can have at the restaurant. So that's what they're going to get.
What are your mom's favorite dishes, dad's favorite dishes?
My dad will eat anything. He'll try anything new. My mom is she tends to be less adventurous on the cooked temperatures of meat and fish and that sort of thing. But she sure loves Pinot Noir. as do I. So that's great.
Like mother, like son.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in Philadelphia. I was essentially an oil brat. I spent a lot of time moving around in various oil towns during the 70s, the boom years. I lived in Texas, Houston, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, Nashville, Tennessee, Atlanta, Georgia. Eventually ended up in New Orleans just as I was entering high school. My formative years in New Orleans played a big influence on who I am. I don't think I'd be cooking or I'd be in the restaurant business if I hadn't lived in New Orleans.
Wow.
And a love for certain things that follow me to this day. A love for music and that sort of thing.
You ate a bunch of good stuff as a teenager?
Well, New Orleans is a great restaurant town. Yeah, it's quite unique, and back then, even then, much more so than arguably any other place in the United States, it had a vibrant restaurant culture that was ingrained into the culture of the population there. I mean, people talked about where they were going to eat and what they were going to eat. They'd give any Frenchman a rival for that sort of attitude, and they'd discuss where they were going to eat, what they were going to have for dinner while they were eating lunch. And it's hard not to get wrapped up into it. I started working in restaurants after school because of the flexible hours. I actually started working in the front of the house. And I actually fell in love with restaurants before I fell in love with cooking. And after working in restaurants, and watching cooks and watching how they worked and that sense of being pirates, And I like the idea. I was working in the dining room, and I saw all these well-heeled people, just being really happy and really, really satisfied with the experiences that they're having. And then you go through these swinging doors, and there's this slight profane group of people who were working with their hands. They were being creative. They were working with fire. There was something very atavistic about it, and I found that very appealing. And
pirate. So did you read pirate stories as a...
No, it's just they were kind of like, there was a bunch of swagger, and slightly profane, like mm-hmm. I said, and that I found appealing. It's I still do. To me, cooking and working food is and working with my hands is very therapeutic. It makes me feel really, really good. My mind clears up. I think really lucidly about not only about what I'm doing, but about other things. And, of course, there's no denying the immediate gratification, satisfaction you get from cooking. You cook something for someone, and they like it. And that makes you feel good, and it gives you a sense of accomplishment
mm-hmm.
to your creative urges. Of course, the flip side being to that is that they won't like it. And then you have to deal with the emotions that come with that. But that's, I think...
You better at handling that nowadays?
Yeah, it's for many reasons. I've come to the conclusion you can't please everybody. I have this, I kind of formulated this completely unscientific, but I call it 3% rule. 3% rule is that any given night, any given service, there's going to be 3% of the people that eat at the restaurant that are not going to have a good experience. And it might be because of the food, it might be because of the service, it might be because of the ambiance. But that's human nature, not everybody's perfect, and not everybody comes in the right frame of mind to enjoy something.
But 3% is a strangely low percentage.
Well, it's it's, I mean, that's, there's a reasoning behind this. I mean, people come in and they can be angry at a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a husband, a wife, a job, the way they're done, the way their day has gone. And, you know, because they're paying money in a public space, sometimes people feel that they can act the way they want and take actions out. And I'm not saying that the restaurant's perfect because, you know, we make mistakes. You know, we're human beings as well. But I guess my point is that, you know, if someone was unhappy, you know, a couple of years ago, if someone was unhappy at Manresa, I would lose sleep over it. It would bother me. And now, you know, I can sleep if it's 3%. You know, if 3% of the population is unhappy for even in the smallest sense for whatever reason, I'm going to sleep well at night. I'm not going to worry about it. Now, if that percentage starts to go up, then, you know, radar goes up and you have to figure out what's going on, if there's anything wrong, and what to do about it.
But how did you come up with the number 3%? Like, what's the math?
You know, I just sat there and figured it out.
Okay.
You know,
how many guests do you serve a night?
We feed about 55 people.
Okay.
Yeah. You do the math. Deuce.
Let's
a table a night.
One.
Let's call it a table a night.
One table a night. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. That months. Makes sense.
You know, it's unusual, too, because, you know, some people don't, you know, I think every restaurateur, every chef will tell you, you know, we always, if people are unhappy with some aspect of their experience at the restaurant, we want to know about it right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
We want to know about it. Why do we want to know about it right then and there? Because we're going to try and do something about it to correct it. Because, you know, we're in the hospitality industry. We want people to be pleased with the experience. Not, we want them to be so pleased that they're going to come back and give us additional business. You know, that's what it's all about. We want to be given the opportunity to correct any mistakes that we have made, whether something wasn't cooked properly or there was a service aspect that they didn't like. What drives us nuts is when everybody, how was everything? Everything was just fine. And then you're reading about it online, or
yes,
you're getting a nasty letter, or you're getting a letter demanding that they be completely reimbursed. And we have to literally piece everything back to figure out exactly what happened.
You're not in the let's play police detective business.
We don't have time for that.
Passive aggressive business.
No,
yeah,
we don't have time for that. You know, so you know, there's always something. You know,
absolutely.
You know, we're dealing with the public. You know, and the myriad, you know, human nature and the humanistic endeavor aspect of the restaurant.
That's what makes it so pleasurable, as well.
Yes, of course.
So, what? Pre-fire David, post-fire David, do you lose sleep over different things now?
I lose less sleep now. I think, in a very general sense, I've learned what is important. I've learned, in the grand scheme of things, some things are more important than others. And that perspective changed quickly, you know, during the course of the restaurant being closed.
So what did you realize? You know, just some examples that maybe we can relate with.
You know, I've learned that you know, your health is of paramount importance. Your mental health and physical health. You know, it's physically demanding. It's mentally demanding what we do, and not sweating the small stuff. You know, I saw a guy. I met this guy at some event. And the guy was like 78 years old, I was talking to him, and the guy was having the time of his life. He had a young girl in his arm, he had a drink in his hand, he had a big smile on his face, twinkle in his eyes, eating some food that he probably shouldn't have been eating. And he looked like he was 45. He looked like he was 45. And I said, I'm like, how do you do it, man? You know, I was like, how do you do that? And he said, it's really simple. You don't sweat the small stuff. You don't sweat the small stuff. He says, don't worry about things that aren't a big deal. He says, I know this is a cliche, but, you know, worry about the big deal things and solve those, the things that will affect you long term. But the small stuff, you know, the older you get, the realize, you know, it's jack shit. It's not important. That stuff's not important.
Was there an example of something that maybe you, that used to get under your skin besides guests that you
know,
sort of...
It's like, I have almost forgotten it. Guests never gotten under my skin.
Okay.
You know, it's You know, people are paying. I cook for guests. Mm-hmm. You know, what we do at Manresa is we try to offer the best experience we possibly can. We want to be the best restaurant we can possibly be. We want people to be really, really happy with everything that happened. We want the food to be delicious, to be perceived as delicious and thought-provoking. I mean, that's what fine dining is about. It's just not feeding people. You know, there is, you know, there's a high level of craft, and not to sound pretentious or anything, but, you know, certain artistic elements that are thought-provoking, that are thoughtful. You know, maybe it's something you've never seen before, a flavor they've never seen before, or a progression of a course. You know, I mean, that's what people are paying for. They're and finding that deliciousness and that thought-provoking thing, but also challenging us in the kitchen. You know, it's where, you know, there's a lot of chefs who cook for themselves and they don't give a shit about their customers. You know, that's like, you know, you're here because of me. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but, you know, for me, it tends to be about hospitality and taking care of guests, but also finding the right balance where we are challenged in the kitchen, where we feel we're contemporary, and we're on the forefront of whatever we're supposed to be on the forefront of. You know, whether it's a California cuisine or whatever. It's finding that balance. But ultimately, we want people to come to the restaurant and have a great and positive experience, and hopefully come back and visit us again.
Well, it sounds like Mom and Dad raised you well.
Some would argue against that, but I'm with you.
What was your high school stereotype like?
What was my high school?
Like, what were you in high school? Who were you in high school? Were you like the jock, you know, the musician,
no,
the
nerd?
I was
a pretty good student. Mm-hmm. I was a skate punk. I learned to surf on the Gulf Coast. That's where I first started. You know, I didn't start surfing in California. I started surfing in Texas and actually surfing along the Gulf. Really into music. I fell in love with food really fast. I ate, you know, I was eating in restaurants and saving money and drinking good bottles of wine even when I was 18, 19 years old. And that was the drinking age back then, too. So, you know, it's like... I fell in love with, you know, the pleasures of life, food and wine and music and things that have followed me to this day.
What was the point that... So, by the way, lots of accolades for Chef David Kinch, James Beard, and 2 Michelin stars, and Michael Bauer, and GQ, by the way. But side question, GQ award, does that mean like you're a cool guy now? You know, because that's like a different nature of
award. I have no idea.
Only cool dudes, right, get like into
the cool kids. I don't know. I'm not. You know, we're in Los Gatos. We're way off the beaten path. We're way off. We were just happened to be included in that. I mean, you know, awards are great.
Of course.
They're nice. Awards, recognition, peers, press, it's all great, especially if it makes us busy, you know, if people make the effort to come to where we are. But the biggest mistake one can make is to cook for awards and acknowledgments.
Totally.
That stuff comes. If you sit there and you have a vision and you cook and you're true to yourself and you cook to make guests happy, you know, the food media is all-encompassing nowadays. You know,
oh, yeah.
They will find you. They will find you and they will make you into the demigod that for whatever reason. I'm a real big believer that if you're true to yourself and you cook according to your vision being true and honest to yourself, then, and you're good, then the accolades and awards, peers and otherwise, will happen.
We all have those moments in life where we're like, holy moly, if I keep on doing what it is that I'm doing, if I keep on going on this path, I could be some semblance of great, of good. You know?
What's that mean?
I just mean, like, maybe there was some point, some opening, some award, something, some moment, some table that you sort of took a step back and said, okay, like, yeah, like, I'm doing the right thing. Like, I'm doing my life's work. I don't know, you know? Mm-hmm. Or you could take one as an overachiever, you could take one deep breath, like feel like you've gotten somewhere.
I don't know. I think I'd be happiest if someone like Michelle Bross walked into my restaurant and had a meal. And, you know, someone who I've always admired and inspired me to, you know, the goals that I try to strive to in my professional life. If they came into my restaurant and ate, you know, I'd be thrilled. That's kind of it for me. You know, it's weird. This question, you know, this, that old question. Mm. If a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound? And nobody hears it. You know, did it actually make a sound? And it's like, if a chef cooks in a restaurant and nobody comes to the restaurant and it goes out of business, you know, is that chef a great chef? You know? What do you think? I mean, it's like, well, you know, it doesn't even have to be that people didn't come because of the food, but they didn't come for whatever reasons. It could be a location or the Amazon. So, you know, is he a great chef? You know, because to me, a chef has to have an audience. They have to have an audience. If they just cook and nobody comes, you know, anybody can do that.
So maybe then, according to your quote, is when you open up your first or your second place and then you saw the dining room filled with people who are enjoying themselves.
Yeah, that's, you know,
something like that.
You know, the real important bottom line things to worry about is can I cook uncompromisingly, pay my staff, and pay my vendors on time?
So then life is really simple.
That's really it. And everything else is like, everything else is, you know, it's kind of secondary, you know. And some things will help, but other things are just, everything's just bullshit. There's a lot of things just bullshit. I mean, you want to be on a magazine cover, David? Well, I'll be on a magazine cover. But I don't want to be on a magazine cover to be famous. I want to be on a magazine cover so my restaurant's busier. I think that's a big difference. Those are two very different things.
I appreciate that. I would like to be on a magazine cover so that if I'm working 24/7 doing what I believe in, then I could, with a bigger audience online and off, like in one tweet, you know, make a difference for somebody like that.
Yes.
Which is really cool to
yes.
me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you, rumor has it that you are a fantastic dancer.
I've never heard that before. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Who said that?
I protect my sword. No, we know a lot of people in common, so.
That's very kind. I disagree with that. I don't know where that came from.
Wow, but. You're just taking some notes now. All right.
Yeah, dancer. No, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I don't know.
What else?
Are you sure it was me?
Yeah, I was sure it was you.
Okay. Right.
But I just wanted to pay you that compliment and say that and ask, hey, what are you doing when you have free time?
Free time, if it's nice, which it is a lot in California, I like to be outside. I like to be in or around the water. You know, I live really close to the beach and the ocean, and I like spending time there. It makes me very, very happy. And calm, surfing in the morning before coming to work is a start of a really great day. You know, the water washes off many different anxieties and negative energy. It makes you feel really, really good and happy and bounce in your step for the rest of the day. And you sleep really well at night at the end of the day. I love to read. I have made a conscious effort in the past year or two is to get further and further away from the internet and actually getting back to reading books and great books.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself very, very happy with that decision.
What are you reading right now?
Right now I am reading a couple different histories. I'm reading a David Sedaris book. I just finished a Murakami book. I'm starting another Murakami book. It's kind of like I'm kind of working my way through a lot of his stuff. You know, I like to read both fiction and nonfiction, but mm-hmm. I tend to gravitate a lot towards nonfiction. I read cookbooks like crazy. I like to read cookbooks from cover to cover. You know, it's nice. It's downtime.
Books are the most amazing escape.
Yeah, and they're tactile too.
You know, it's so like, you do the real book thing.
I do that. I do. You know, I have a Kindle. You know, I have a Kindle.
Okay.
Which is great on planes and great in hotel rooms and that sort of stuff because you don't need a light. But you know, on a day off thing, it's the physicality of an actual book, turning a page, rustle the page, the feel of the paper, the weight of the book. To me, that's pleasure.
So we just got news that you're opening up a more casual place in town.
Yes. Possible, yes. Working on it. I'm very excited about it. You know, we had pre-fire, 12 years of business. I never opened up another establishment. I always was working in my one restaurant. And people were always asking, when are you going to expand? When are you going to build your empire? And you know, I never really thought about it because I always liked working and cooking in my own place. And you know, I guess part of the reevaluation of the downtime of the fire made me think a lot more about it. Maybe thinking that you know you only live once. So we started on newer projects. The bakery is more of a project for some very talented people I have working for me that deserve the opportunity. I did my best to create an opportunity for them to do that. The casual place, I think it's more of a product, you know, just thinking about it. You know, I don't think it was a fear of failure and not attempting to do anything. I think it was more of a fear of success. I don't know exactly what it was, but you know, things have kind of come together, and you know, I'm going to open up a place that I want to go to myself after work. You know, with good music and oyster bar and a great drink, and maybe a good fried oyster sandwich, you know, bowl of gumbo, you know, kind of New Orleans theme, New Orleans theme to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be you know, I can hit a three wood. From the restaurant to the new place, so it's just down the street. So we're gonna stay right around this all-encompassing little area of the bakery and the race in the new project.
That is really rad. So your journey to, you know, being a chef owner is, it just feels to me like you've taken very much your own path. You took your time, you traveled all over the world, you learned from all over the world. Do you feel like maybe compared with maybe some chefs who open up their first place when they're like in their late 20s that you kind of did, I don't know, did your own thing? You just strike me as an oddball.
Oh, I'll take that as a compliment. you know, I opened up you know, I took the step to opening up my own place, the first restaurant, Sensovi, back in 1995. I did it because I was ready.
Okay.
I was ready for it. I think the last couple jobs I had before that, I realized that it was time for me to be my own boss. I had my own ideas. It took me a while to work up to that. I did travel a lot. I think moving around a lot as a kid, you know, people, I never had a chance to put down roots, never had a chance to have long-term friendships and that sort of thing, and I think a lot of people would be bothered by that, maybe affected by that. And you know what? Frankly, I loved it. I loved the transient nature of my childhood. I think it played a big role in, you know, my lifelong wanderlust and why I love to travel now. It's a big part of my inspiration and where I find ideas for the restaurant. I know that's an easy one. That's kind of a no-brainer, but you know, traveling and seeing new things and visiting markets, visiting peers' restaurants, are still like major inspirations for everything. And I wandered away from the question. What was the original question?
Oh, again? Yep. It's
Wow, way off. Way off.
The question was, I think I was just sort of like poking you because the poke was like you
oddball.
Seem like an
you
oddball.
Me an oddball. Yeah. No, I opened the restaurant because I was ready to be. You know, I had articulated a vision in my head about what I wanted to new at this first restaurant, and you know, a lot of it depended on, a lot of it was predicated on wanting to be my own boss and to be personally responsible for everything that took place. And I was really lucky, since I was very small with a shoestring budget, and mm-hmm. it was really successful, and I was busy from day one. And tiny kitchen the size of a closet, I spent 7.5 years there, and it was going crazy. And Resa, you know, though a different restaurant, was essentially just a relocation, a bigger space,
mm-hmm.
more comfortable, more space.
How old were you when you opened it?
We moved in 2002, so I was 41.
When you opened up the first place?
No, when I opened up Marisa.
Okay. In the first place you were?
Sensovia was 1995, so 34.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes sense. What would be your dream job if you weren't a chef?
It'd be something with the ocean, be something on a boat. You know, as a kid, I always dreamed about being like a marine biologist, working with like marine animals and that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I always like being on the water, sea creatures, that sort of thing. Still do.
What's your sign?
Aries.
Okay. I'm an Aries. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm a Pisces on the verge of Aries.
It's not the same thing. Definitely not the same thing.
I don't know what I believe or don't believe, but I just wanted to ask you that question because I find it hilarious.
Yeah, my birthday was a couple weeks ago.
Are you religious?
No, but slightly spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
It's personal.
Anything that you do believe in? Like, not, you know, just... You know, big picture, like, what drives you?
I am a huge believer in personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And taking responsibility for your actions, both good and bad.
Okay. Interesting. And...
It's one of the things I demand of my staff. Take personal responsibility. I think it's a true mark of being a mature professional, is taking personal responsibility for your actions.
I like
it. You'd be amazed.
Really?
You'd be amazed how some people grasp it and some people don't.
I like that. Well, when you're interviewing people, is there a particular sort
question
of like...
Question I ask?
Yeah.
No. I say...
Or just can you...
I say, do you want to be babysat? Do you want me to hold your hand? Do you want mm-hmm. me to lifeguard and look over? Keep telling the same thing over and over and over and over again? Or because you're a professional and you're working in your chosen profession, do you want to take personal responsibility for your action, earn my trust, and then do a great job?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Knives that are not sharp tell you everything. You know, people who have a chosen profession, we all have tools. We all have tools. Your tools are your livelihood. So you need to really take care of your tools and pay attention to your tools. And you walk up to someone who has chosen to work in an environment and work hours and hours and hours for not very much pay at an early stage in their career, and they have dull knives, that tells you everything you need.
So since we're in interview mode, I'm going to ask you the classic, most annoying interview question, which is, what is your biggest weakness?
What is my biggest weakness?
Yeah.
Sometimes I value loyalty over merit.
Okay. Wow. Thank you so much, Chef David. I think we are out of time. I want to get you back along to the restaurant because I know you have a big private event coming up. Thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you. This was great fun. Thank you.
That was just Chef David Kinch, owner of the 2 Michelin-starred Manresa and the newly opened The Bywater. This was recorded April 17th, 2014 in Los Gatos, California on today's very special edition of Word of Mouth. We're on every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Eastern, usually live here in the studio in Brooklyn. I'm your host, Leti Su. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.